As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome to Success Story. I'm your host, Scott Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. They supported the show for over 2 years now, and I've used HubSpot for the majority of my professional career. One of the most useful tools that is included in the HubSpot suite of products is Sales Hub. Sales Hub is an all-in-one platform built with the tools and insights that you need to communicate on a personal level with every lead, every prospect, every customer. It doesn't matter what kind of business you're building, Sales Hub makes it easier to close more deals and drive more revenue. If you're looking for a better way to acquire customers, and we all are because that is the lifeblood of our business, if you're looking to make smart, data-driven decisions, increase visibility, productivity, predictability of your revenue, you gotta look at Sales Hub. It can organize and sort deals in your pipeline. It creates reminder tasks for your most important deadlines. It manages leads. It automates outreach. It tracks and closes deals all in one place. And on top of that, it's free to get started, and it grows with your business as it scales. There's 1,300 integrations and a ton of valuable add-ons. Customize it exactly to your needs. With Sales Hub, closing deals is no longer a big deal. Go to HubSpot.com/sales and try it for free. Today we have a very special guest who is not only a successful businesswoman, but a passionate advocate for women empowerment and environmental conversation. She is Sarah Dusek, a managing partner and co-founder of Enigma Ventures, a private investment fund dedicated to supporting and investing in women-led businesses in Africa. Now, Sarah has an incredibly impressive track record of creating and scaling innovative ventures that combine profit and purpose. In 2022, she launched a $600 million capital vehicle to drive conservation efforts globally, with plans to invest in sustainable eco-lodging. Quiver Tree Collection will be the largest investment vehicle of its kind in the world. Before that, she founded the leading upscale outdoor hospitality brand Under Canvas, which sold in 2018 for over $100 million. Under Canvas received a spot on the coveted Inc. 5000 list in 2017. And in the same year, Sarah was also named Ernst & Young's EY Entrepreneurial Winning Woman list as a forward thinker and changemaker. Sarah believes in the power of leveraging challenging circumstances to propel forward change. Give me the time in your life. There's a point in your life that was incredibly impactful. It set you on the road that you're on today. So it could have been when you're growing up. It could have been a point in your career that you took a total 180. It could have been something much more personal, like the way that, you know, your parents brought you up, or early, you know, childhood education, whatever it is. There's something that has been meaningful enough. And there's probably a whole bunch of them. But there was one thing, because I can sort of pinpoint into my life at least, when this thing happened, or this career event happened, or this life event happened, and it was like a light bulb moment that said, listen, I don't know where we're going to go eventually, but this is a direction I want to start going in. And maybe that we can kick it off that way. So pick that moment and we'll go from there.
There are so many moments that have been very pivotal in my life in terms of sort of shaping the direction the course of my life and my career has gone. But in terms of the work that I do now and the work that I'm passionate about, that I'm really excited to share more about with you, really came about because of a moment of trying to raise venture capital for my own startup in the US and being faced with a VC who quite simply was a bully. And he's probably not the only bully to ever exist in the world, but he was a bully that made me think more women have to be investors. More women have to build wealth and have to get into the arena of also being the ones to invest in others and help make other women make things happen. And the story goes that I had spent about 18 months trying to raise our first sort of large sort of round of capital for my own startup. And we'd been in business a long time, 6-7 years. We'd bootstrapped the business, but we'd come to this sort of pivotal point in our business journey where we realized if we didn't put capital into the business, we would get left behind, that we would not be the market leaders. We potentially would lose big market share, would be gone. And we just knew that it was time to put fuel in the tank and really escalate our business journey and you know, stop playing a small game and play a much bigger game. So I went out to raise venture capital, being very green for sure about what that looked like and what it would entail and how hard it would be and how long it would take. And I found it infinitely more difficult than I thought it would be. But I finally got a term sheet to the table after about 18 months of talking to hundreds of people. And finally, a prestigious firm said, yes, we love what you're doing. We love what you're building. Here you go. Here's a term sheet. And I was so relieved and so excited. And so, you know, I just felt like the future of my company is like, we're going to be okay. We're going to keep going. We're going to do this. All is going to be well. And the term sheet was horrible. it was not terms that we thought were going to work for us, that they felt quite predatory and they felt really quite extreme in terms of where we were at in our life cycle as a business and in terms of the amount of control we would be giving up for the amount of money that we would be taking on board. And I remember saying, you know, I was so desperate to keep this term sheet, though, even though, you know, when you know something doesn't feel good in your heart, but you just keep going anyway because you don't want to let go of it and you don't want to pass up something that you've worked really hard for. But yet at the same time, you just feel like, don't feel like this is quite right. So I kept going. I kept persevering until one day.
You didn't take it, though.
When I had to tell this.
Good.
I didn't take it.
Good.
No, I didn't take it. I had to tell this guy a problem had happened. We were in diligence. We'd signed this term sheet. We were moving forward. And I had to tell this guy a problem, a big problem had happened in the company, but that I was going to fix it. I was going to sort it out. I had a plan, but I needed to tell them, right? I needed to be upfront and tell them this is what is going wrong this moment, because there's always something going wrong in a startup, right? It's just life. But this is what's going wrong in this moment. And he said to me, in reply to me being honest and transparent and not trying to like cover this thing up, he said to me, that is really bad. That is really bad for you. If you don't fix that, you are not going to come back from that. This is going to be on you and it's going to look really bad. And I was like, what?
There's a lot of red flags bundled into that.
This is like, bing, 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 bing. And I was like, I don't think we're going to be really well suited to being in business together. This is not great. And so I told him, I don't think we can do this deal. At which point he cemented my decision by telling me, well, you are never going to be able to, if you don't take money from me, you are never going to be able to raise capital from anyone, because everyone's going to want to do a deal like this. And I'm going to make sure that no one wants to invest in you, because I'm going to blackball you. I was like, well, I am really sure I am not doing a deal with you right now.
Can I even frame it up a little bit? Like, because you said you bootstrapped. So you were growing the company and it was healthy. Was it profitable? Like, was there all the markers?
Yeah, we were really profitable. We were doing about $7 million in revenue by about this point, probably doing like $1 million of EBITDA. So I was doing really well, and we were plowing all. I know, it was great. And we were plowing all our profit back into doing more in the business and putting more capital and to focus on growth. So we were using every cent that we had to keep growing. So there was nothing, you know, there was no, we were seriously lean and keen. But I felt like, you know, I have a really great business here. My business is doing a lot of, you know, a decent amount of revenue. We're profitable. I've got this great onward trajectory. We feel good. But yeah, it was not to be.
So was that under Canvas, or was that a different business that you're?
I was under Canvas. Yeah, that was during my under Canvas journey. Under Canvas is a large scale glamping company with locations across the US. But that moment made me realize, if I ever sell my company, if I ever turn Under Canvas into something that is valuable, that somebody else wants to come along and buy at some point in time, I'm going to be an investor. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and start investing in other women, because this is crazy.
It's very sad. I've heard this story many times. A good friend and business partner of mine, she sold her company. She was a Forbes 30 under 30, and she thought she would get in on all the right deals and all the right rooms after you have those kinds of accolades. And even as an investor with money, with capital, she was not getting access to the deals that she wanted to get into at all, which is actually why we're working together now on something completely separate. But yes, it's very shocking.
It's really hard. It's very shocking. It's like this is not the 1920s. This is like this shouldn't be like this. And I just fundamentally felt in my heart that venture capital doesn't need to be like that. And that actually venture capital, it's what fuels economies, because it's what builds businesses, right? And you know, my whole philosophy now is that that's how we move countries and nations forward. That we invest in building businesses, because when we build businesses, we create jobs that creates revenue that stimulates economies, and that's what makes our world go round. If we think about what makes the US economy one of the largest economies in the world, it's small business, it's business. It's this ability, it's the American dream that says anyone can make it, and anyone from anywhere can build something extraordinary and solve problems and make things happen. And we just build this extraordinarily incredible ecosystem of people hustling and making things happen and buying and selling and doing all sorts of crazy things. But that's dignity, right? That's life. And so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today. And today I have a small venture capital fund investing in female-led businesses in Africa. So the two-pronged approach of investing in women and helping other women go on the journey that I've been on, and also using capital to help fuel economic growth in emerging markets.
Okay, we're going
to
go into that. I'm not done with Under Canvas yet. I'm just still curious. Just one more. We have to know. I know how the story concluded, because it was amazing and there's press around it and it was very successful. But how did you get over that hump? So how did you grow? What happened? You got rid of this really.
Well, I cried after that hump. I cried a lot. Let's not be around the bush right now. I cried a lot and I felt really sorry for myself. And I had a little pity party for about 5 minutes. And after that pity party, I got back up again and said, okay, still got to go find money, still got to put fuel in this tank, still got to get this done. So thankfully went back out to market, and about 6 months later did an infinitely better deal with fantastic terms. with great partners who we loved, and I think they still love us because I made them. and we went on and really exponentially grew the company. And about a year later after that, unexpectedly sold the company at the very end of 2018.
Yeah, it was a good exit. So it was.
It was quite a wild ride there for a couple of years.
But that's how business is. So. What, before we really focus on what you're focused on now, what would be the one thing that you would tell a young entrepreneur who's raising money, who's in a similar situation to you? 18 months is an incredibly long time. So stressful, so time consuming. So what's the one lesson? What's the thing that you're telling somebody right now who's trying to raise capital? It could be a woman who's struggling to find the right conversations or the right investors, or it could just be another young entrepreneur, because yes, women probably have it much harder raising money, but I know a lot of just entrepreneurs that have predatory term sheets given to them as well.
Yeah, it's just hard. Well, there's two or three things I might say. The most important thing, just on the back of the story that I just told, is just because somebody offers you a term sheet doesn't mean you need to take it. So, right, don't do a bad deal. It's always better to do no deal than do a bad deal, right? So do a deal that you feel good about, and don't believe the hype that says this is the way it's always going to be. This is the only deal you can get. This is the everyone's doing deals like this. This is normal. And yes, there are definite norms in venture capital, but there's always a spectrum of normal. Normal is not one thing. There is no such thing as a normal term sheet. So if something doesn't sit right with you, just don't do it. Work with it. And I think the amazing thing I found about not having access to capital meant I got really creative, right? And I got really, really good at driving ROI on very small amounts of money. So allow the barrier to be an asset, right? So use it to your advantage to get creative, to find ways of making things happen that couldn't have happened otherwise. Because when you do get capital, and you, if you persevere long enough, ultimately you will find you will find the right capital. You will, absolutely, no doubt in my mind. But what you can do whilst you're waiting to raise capital is make sure that you get really good at generating ROI. Because when you do get money, you know, large chunks of money hit your business, you can then really put that to work and be really good at making that money work for you. And what we see a lot of out in the marketplace is that when money's easy, and we're not in an easy money time right now, we're in a difficult money time, but when money is easy, we overspend, we overcapitalize, we get ahead of ourselves, we waste it, and we're not smart. And all that does is it makes it harder for us to go raise more money. And so what I would say is get smart with what you've got. Because if you can get smart with what you've got, ultimately you'll get good at generating great returns, you'll get great at making money, you'll get much more focused about having to be profitable much faster than potentially you would otherwise, which is actually really, really important. You'll build a great business. Ultimately, your business will have great foundations because you didn't overcapitalize too soon or too easily.
I'm curious if you think there is ever a point when somebody should be raising money before they're profitable, or do you think that people should really focus on growth funding?
Yes. I think a lot of companies, it's quite hard to build something profitable without something to start with. Our own business, we injected $40,000 of initial startup capital and managed to turn that into $100 million in value. But that's a really unusual thing to be able to do, right? To turn $40,000 into cash that you can make more money from. So it usually takes some money to make money. The question is how much money and what do you need to get you going? So figuring out where that sort of first Usually your friends, your family, your network, you know, people who believe in you are going to be the first people to rally around you to help you get your foot in the door and actually start to make something happen. So I definitely believe in raising capital before a business is profitable. But the faster you are thinking about being on the trajectory towards profitability is definitely to your advantage for sure.
So after Under Canvas, now you want to solve for a problem. So you experience this not so great experience with the venture capitalist. So this is something that you're trying to solve for now. So where do you go after Under Canvas? What's the first step? Is it, you know, a lot of people that were operators in businesses, they could go into angel investing, or maybe they would bolt on to an existing venture capital firm and maybe try and improve them a little bit, but you didn't do that. Or maybe you did try all those things and I don't know about it, but eventually it ended up with Enigma.
Yeah. So maybe that was stupid. I don't know.
No.
Maybe that's what I should have done.
No, not at all. Not at all. So what is the goal? So was Enigma the thing that you took on almost immediately after? Did you take some time and actually like just take a break, relax, or were you very headstrong and you jumped into this?
No, I took no time whatsoever, which was also probably really stupid.
Listen, it's because you're passionate about it. I do think you probably should have taken some time, but it doesn't matter.
Probably should have.
You don't take any time at all.
That's the thing.
You got $100 million exit and you just jumped into like the next job.
No. Well, the crazy thing was after that happened, the night we signed the deal for Under Canvas, you know, we're ready to pop the champagne. I was still staying on for CEO for a year post the transaction. And I came home from work that day. I'd signed this amazing deal, ready with the champagne, ready to be all excited. And I have two young boys at home. I'm a mother of two. And my oldest son was vomiting up a storm. And we had norovirus hit our house that night. And for the next 2 weeks, like successively someone else like got the stomach flu. And we spent the next 2 weeks throwing up in our household. So there wasn't even a moment of popping the champagne.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive. And I bet we've all been there. And maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success.
But I did go back to work for Under Canvas for a year of transition post that sale. But so things were brewing for me during that year, with thinking about what do I do next? What do I care about? How do I make this idea a reality in my own head? And I was eager to get stuck in and get to work, working with other women, listening to their stories, hearing their pain and their challenges. And ready for a new adventure. So that's what happened. And we started investing in the beginning of 2020, which was also a really good time to start a new venture.
Of course. Of course.
But I was very thankful for it, actually, because it meant that during that crazy, crazy time, I still had a very strong sense of purpose and people to support and people to rally around. Because it's actually very difficult once you've, and maybe not many people talk about this actually, but when you've been a CEO and you've been a founder of a startup for a long time, I mean, 10 years is, you know, a good chunk of one's life. It was a quarter of my life. It's very hard to suddenly not have that. You know, I had a lot of people I was responsible for. You know, I spent my life traveling from one place to another, being all over the place, meeting people and working with different groups of people. And suddenly for it all to stop is quite strange. And I'm 40 something, so I wasn't ready to retire and, you know, go sit on a beach. Still had a lot of energy and a lot of passion. And so actually I was very thankful that when the pandemic rolled around, and there was no beach to go sit on, that I wasn't planning on sitting one. So, it was serendipitous.
And to each their own. I mean, I advocate for rest after having a 10-year run and building a business, but I also know that it's...
Yeah, and I would advocate a little bit from a little bit of a larger gap.
But it's funny because you're not that abnormal, to be quite honest. I don't know too many people like... I interview a lot of people. I was an operator myself and still am to a degree. And it doesn't matter if you have a successful thing or a successful event or something ends. You're just like, what's the next thing? It's always, it's just a personality at the end of the day. I really believe that.
It is. And the kind of people that are founders and entrepreneurs, that, you know, that's kind of like the inbuilt thing, is you're designed to be going where no one else has gone and doing things no one else has gone. And you're constantly looking for, you know, the path that doesn't exist yet so that you can go forge it. So it's a blessing and a curse for sure.
So you're using that gift of constantly trying to build. That's a good thing. That's a very good thing. So with Enigma, so this was almost right after Under Canvas. Now, was Enigma Ventures was it originally just you investing? Because I know that you raised an actual, you raised against the actual initiative.
Well, we're still trying to raise more capital for Enigma. So I'm still on the jolly merry-go-round of raising capital. And I gave myself more pain because not only do I have to raise more funding for our fund, but also now have a dozen startups who also need to go on and raise more capital from other people. So it's like, what did I do to myself? I just put ourselves on the fundraising bandwagon forever.
That's the job now. That's entirely the job. But I was going to say, did you start focusing immediately on women-led businesses in Africa?
Yes, we did. Yeah, that's been the thesis. That's been the thesis from the beginning, really. The woman part is the easy part. Well, both parts are easy to explain, but one's more obvious than the other in that my own experience as a female founder just, and my own sort of lack of knowledge made me think, I didn't know how this game was played. I didn't, because it really truly is a big boys club. It really was quite difficult to navigate. And I realized if I, you know, I'm very well educated, but if I felt like that, I can't be the only woman in the world that this was hard for, or this was difficult to break through in. So I just felt like I think I could potentially make it easier, and I could potentially help other women get a leg up in making this, traveling this same journey that I've been on. So that was the first part. And the second part with Africa is that I came to Africa in my early 20s. It was what inspired the formation of Under Canvas. In Under Canvas, we reimagined the safari experience for a mass market audience in the US by recreating the safari experience outside of national parks across the country. And so I fell in love with Africa 20 odd years ago. And when I came to Africa the first time, I came as an aid worker. And I came working for an NGO that was doing AIDS education and schools and youth work. And I ended up working for NGOs for about 8 years before finally moving over to the dark side. And I was disillusioned, frustrated, and sad about how little impact I felt the work that I was doing at the time was able to make. And yes, of course, on a micro scale, all good works. But I didn't feel like I ever contributed towards solving any big world problems. And I actually think that big world systemic problems are solvable in my lifetime. I think poverty is solvable. I think, you know, clean water is solvable for everyone. I think healthcare for everyone is solvable. And I realized then that NGOs are not the right vehicle for solving problems, and that actually businesses are the vehicles that solve problems. You know, businesses innovate. That's, you know, the whole reason a BITS business exists is because they are solving a particular problem for a particular group of people in a particular place, and they become sustainable because somebody pays them to solve that problem over and over and over again. And so it just fascinated me, this idea that business not only could be a force for good in the world, that actually we might be able to solve some big world problems and contribute towards building a world through business. And so that was the nebulous of the idea. Could we empower and support female entrepreneurs? And could we also see if we could tackle some big world problems at the same time?
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, HubSpot. Now, the Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. So if you like this show, you'll love some of the other shows in their network. One of my personal favorites is the Hustle Daily Show. It brings you a healthy dose of irreverent, offbeat, and informative takes on business and tech news. And you guessed it, every single day. Some of their recent episodes that were my personal favorites: how AI is making fake IDs, how to meet your favorite CEO for a few thousand dollars, and also how TikTok is turning into an online mall and starting to replace QVC. If you love business, if you want to get it daily, Listen to the Hustle Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Interesting. I have similar views about NGOs, and the thesis of the NGO is great. Like, they want to do a good job and they want to solve for a particular problem. But it doesn't seem to move the needle at the rate that it actually has to be moved.
It doesn't move the needle fast enough. It doesn't drive change fast enough. And I think NGOs are really well suited in a caring, supporting, bandaging, emergency, you know, here and now we need to help these people, like right now. In terms of long-term getting to the root of big issues so that this issue doesn't continue to keep happening to millions and millions of people, I don't know that they are the best vehicle to solve.
So when you start this venture, you want to invest in women-led and women-owned businesses in Africa. Walk me through. So I'm assuming day one, it's some of your money yourself, and then you start to raise. Now, what are the nuances of investing in Africa? Because I know nothing about it. I know that investing in North America is already high risk, and I even would know the institutions and infrastructure that supports it, so that at least even though it's high risk, there's still some chance that if you have a YC company or if you have some other company that has a big name investor, there's a good chance they're going to be successful. But in Africa, there is an ecosystem and there is infrastructure, not to the degree of North America, but you have to vet that out. You have to solve for what does good look like? How do you find the right entrepreneurs, right idea, right market? You have a better idea because you spent time over there for sure. But there's definitely nuances that somebody like myself and other investors in North America would not understand at all. So what are some of those?
Yeah, that's why you should invest in funds. Yes, like
exactly.
Mine.
You're the expert. That is very true. That is very true.
With people on the ground, working with people day in, day out. Because at the end of the day, I think great investing is about investing in great people with great ideas.
Nothing changes. And that's the core.
Nothing changes. No, at the end of the day, you know, still it's people that make things happen, right? However brilliant someone's idea is, if they can't execute on that idea, it doesn't matter. And so looking for good ideas with extraordinary people is what we really are looking for. And if the ideas that people have happen to be able to impact a billion people's lives, or, you know, create services and products for a billion people on the continent or worldwide.
So it was more about the African entrepreneurial ecosystem.
Yes. And investing, you know, we're looking for great people, extraordinary people with good ideas. And that's the same wherever you are, really. And so, you know, finding people who potentially could be solving problems that could, you know, reach a billion people across the continent, or could create services and products for, you know, a billion person market is what we're looking for. Or a company that could be global or produce products and services that could be utilized around the world. So the ecosystem, you are right, is just very early. So it's like we are 50 years ago, we're at the origins of Silicon Valley. And I think the exciting thing about that is, A, there are an extraordinary number of opportunities because the ecosystem's so young, and there's great opportunity to sort of get in at the beginning of something before, you know, things are really taking off. But at the same time, a real opportunity to do things differently than have happened through the venture space in Silicon Valley. And there's a lot that I would change, for example, about the Silicon Valley investing space. And so Africa's, because we've got sort of an early market, there's a real opportunity to learn from everything we know about what works and what doesn't work, and figure out, is there a way to look at Africa and go, what's going to work here? What do we know? What do we not like? What's good? What's bad? What's ugly? And how do we do something new? And that's pretty exciting. For any entrepreneur, that's pretty exciting.
So maybe even like go into some of that. What's not good about Silicon Valley? What should we do different? What are you trying to do different in some of the companies that you invest in, nurture, mentor, advise? What are those things?
I mean, starting point, maybe equitable terms. So very often what you have on the table is the money has all the power and the entrepreneur has none. And so we have, you know, a whole system that's built around the VC being powerful and the entrepreneur not being, and being very much indifferent to the money that's at the table. So there's so much we can do to level that playing field. And yes, we all understand, you know, we're trying to make money by investing, right? But I also think we need to be true, real partners that sit alongside each other, pari passu, at the table, and say, we're in this together. And I'm not more powerful and more important than your effort and your energy and your sweat. And my money isn't more powerful and more important than you. And so I think that's one thing. I also think investors acting like they aren't like in charge. So, you know, we see that a lot, right? With investors, because they have all the power and all the control and all the rights and all the rest of it, that they act like they dominate and own companies when they really don't. And actually, I think what entrepreneurs need is they need us, A, to get out of the way when they're going great guns, and they need us to ask great questions and help them learn the things they don't know that maybe we already knew because we learned the hard way or the expensive way, and share those things, right? But create an environment for freedom, because some people still have to learn their own way the hard way, right? And my own experience of investing is, you know, sometimes I can tell women, you know, that's we should do it like this. This is not the way it should be done, or, you know, it'd be better if we did this. And sometimes people just need to make their own mistakes. And that can be, as an investor, it can be very hard, especially when you know, that's not the right way. But if you really truly believe in the person that you've backed, and because you chose this person, right? You've invested in them. You know, we've got to have more tolerance for mistakes. We've got to have more tolerance for learning. We've got to have greater capacity to sit at the table shoulder to shoulder and say we're in the trenches together, and so that no one ever gets that phone call that says, this is really bad for you. You know, you're going to be out in your ear. I was like, what? You know, no. It's like, how can I help you? What can I do to make this better? It's like, how can I go ahead of you and open doors for you and make things happen for you? And that's what investing should be all about, I think, opening doors, because we're gatekeepers. So how do we open the gates? How do we fundamentally make sure that more women and people of color are equally accessing capital? How do we make sure that the rooms look multicolored, multigendered, and no longer just white male who went to Harvard and Stanford and, you know, Princeton and all the rest of it? How do we diversify that? Because if we can diversify who's getting capital, we're going to diversify the problems that we solve. And ultimately, we're going to build a better world, because we're going to be building a world for everybody as opposed to just a small segment of society, or even just building a world for the West, you know, in terms of, you know, we have a very insular, monolithic way that capital is being invested around the world. And it's in a Western way. And actually, that doesn't work for 75% of the world. And so how do we start thinking more diversely, more globally, and tackling some of the big challenges that we can see, and investing capital where it matters? So I see a lot of frivolous capital being deployed. The latest one I just heard a few weeks ago was like $200 million being invested in a company that helps you decide which watch you should wear.
I haven't heard this one.
It makes me want to blow my brains out, because could we think about investing capital to help people do something that matters, right? Change a problem, change a, you know, solution that really matters. It doesn't matter what watch I wear, or if I wear a watch, it does not matter. And so let's think about using capital as a force for good and caring about what we do with it. And I think if we can think about not just investing to make a return, but investing to drive impact and to drive results, and that should be as important as the return we make on the capital. I'd love to see the stock exchange, for example, value companies by how much good they do as well as how much profit they return to their bottom line. That would completely be a game changer for how the money markets work, for example. I mean, not going to happen in my lifetime, but
it's, you know, funny because they don't have to be exclusive KPIs either.
No, they don't. And very often companies that are doing good are doing really, really well. And so how do we start to put these pieces of the puzzle together? And so I think those are some of the opportunities for, you know, when you're in a new space and a new market, of rewriting the rules. Those are some of the things that I think are super exciting.
So what is the opportunity in Africa then? So what do you see with some of these companies?
Well, to put it in context, we had $5 billion invested, VC money invested in Africa in 2022. And I think the same number in the US was about $200 billion. So we have a huge difference.
Yes, fair.
In capital being deployed, which obviously means we're woefully underfunded, but we're seeing huge advancements at the moment in fintech in particular. Fintech's super, super hot. So you've got the movement of money, payments, digitizing services. So digitization of money, for example, is becoming a huge thing, and moving a unbanked population to being banked for the first time. We've got a couple of companies that are playing in that space that are both doing extraordinarily well. We're seeing advances in education. Education tech is also really big in thinking about how can we move the needle in the education realm. And we're seeing tech, because Africa has not been as advanced in terms of how much tech is integrated into everyone's lives. There's so much opportunity for creating digitization across the board in almost every arena. So every day we're sort of looking at new opportunities to this service to become online, and this and this and this and this and this. And so that's super exciting too. So definitely at the front end. And of course, we have the statistic that says by 2040, 25% of the world's population, working population, will be in Africa. So a quarter of the world's workforce is going to be here in Africa. So we got to build jobs, we got to create companies, we got to create opportunities. Otherwise, we're going to have a quarter of the world unemployed, which is not going to bode well for any of us.
No, it's not. But when you look at the opportunities in Africa, there's obviously reasons. It's not without any cause for concern why people have not poured money into Africa yet. So what are the challenges that you face at a political level? There's layers to this that makes, I'm sure, some of it more difficult than a free-flowing economy like the US. So what are the things that also have to be updated in conjunction with?
Yeah, so we've got infrastructure issues, and depending on which country you're in, you know, the infrastructure may be more advanced or less advanced, and your logistics is therefore problematic potentially with supply chain and production, local production of products potentially challenging. I just don't think enough money has been invested in Africa, period. And so some of the historical lack of investment just really shows drastically in Africa, you know, be that roads or hospitals or, you know, education, you know, some of the fundamental things that, you know, are on par. And, you know, I'm sitting in one of the wealthiest countries in Africa. I'm in South Africa, has probably some of the best infrastructure on the continent. And so it varies drastically wherever you go. But we're seeing all sorts of incredible people come up with ideas for solving even some of these big kind of issues. Like I'm seeing all sorts of logistic companies starting to come up, for example, trying to tackle the cross-border logistic challenges and digitize those services and, you know, find ways to get things across borders much more easily. So there's definitely challenges, but there's challenges everywhere.
No, I agree. And what I'm hearing
everywhere.
I was going to say what I'm hearing. I didn't mean to cut you off. Apologies. I just wanted to really paint this picture. So a lot of the companies that you're investing in are solving the infrastructure challenges that really, it's almost like a chicken and egg scenario. So you have people that are not willing or not wanting to invest in Africa. But when somebody is willing to invest in Africa, then you actually solve problems that would make Africa more investable to the average North American or even global investor.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are seeing money being poured into Africa. The Chinese are, you know, have been notoriously pouring money into the continent for decades and decades and decades, you know, building mines for, you know, mining that, you know, Africa's so rich in minerals and resources and gold and diamonds and all the rest of it. And, you know, in exchange for opportunity to mine those resources, are building roads and schools and public services. And so I think the challenge becomes, can we enable Africa to build itself and invest in itself? And how do we bring capital into the continent that empowers real people to build on the ground rather than waiting for governments to fix things that they may have never fixed or never done or never been able to do? And so, you know, I'm a big believer in power to the little people, power to the people on the ground, because that's how I think you really build economies and you really drive change and you build from the ground up.
Now, obviously, you only have so much money that you can flow into Africa through Enigma, and there's a lot of entrepreneurs that need access to capital. So it is a highly competitive environment right now for the entrepreneurs that are even, you know, speaking with you. So how do you decide who to work with? But also on the other side, how does somebody stand out?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, I typically look at about 10,000 applications a year.
Oh my God.
Which is a lot.
It's a lot of applications.
it's a lot of applications. So to stand out, you've got to be pretty darn special.
Today's sponsor is BetterHelp. Now, hear me out. If you magically had an extra hour in a day, and I know sometimes that's the only time we get to ourselves, what would you do with it? Maybe you would catch up on sleep. Maybe you'd hit the gym. Maybe you'd finally get into that book that you've been eyeing. We're always wishing for more time. But what if we focused on how we use the time that we have? Think about what really lights you up. What would change in your life if you made that a priority? Do you even know what that thing is? Well, therapy has been a game changer for me, not because of some terrible thing that's happened to me, but because it's helped me figure out what matters, how to manage tough emotions, how to be a better friend, a partner, business person, and just really person all around. So if you're even a little curious about therapy, if you want to help think through what matters to you, what to prioritize, how to live your life, try BetterHelp. It's totally online and works around your crazy schedule. No awkward waiting rooms. Just get matched with a licensed therapist and start making the most of the time you've already got. Learn how to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/successpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/successpod. Today's show is brought to you by 1Password. Now listen, we all have that one friend who's constantly forgetting passwords and needing help to get into their accounts. I have a solution. It's called 1Password. 1Password is the award-winning password manager trusted by millions of users and companies like IBM and Slack to keep logins, credit cards, and other private info safe in an encrypted vault that only you can access. No more sticky notes with passwords or using the same password everywhere. I've been using 1Password for a year now and I can't recommend it enough. It saves me time from having to reset passwords and gives me peace of mind knowing my info is secure. With convenient features like automatic password generation and login autofill, 1Password takes the hassle out of passwords. You can use it on all your devices, iOS, Android, Mac, PC. Everything syncs seamlessly. And with top-notch security audits and encryption, your data stays private. So do yourself a favor and check out 1Password today. Go to 1Password.com/Clary and get a 2-week free trial. Let 1Password remember all of your logins for you so you can remember what really matters. That's 1Password.com/Clary for 2 weeks free.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Spectacular. But I tell you what stands out more than anything, and it's traction. So when you can prove you've already done something and you're already doing it and you've already got huge amounts of momentum and you're growing really fast, it's really hard to pass that up, right? Because really, venture capital, all we really want to do is back something that's already working, that's already got some momentum, and that you can pour some fuel on the fire. So you want there to be a fire. You want there to be something that's already raging, and that you just help it out just a little bit by putting more fuel into it. So I'm looking for stuff that's growing. It's growing, you know, rapidly month over month. It's got a really good trajectory, that it's easy to see. If we just put more capital to work, this growth can continue, because that's magic.
I love that. And what would be the advice? Because I know that, you know, you pitched to a whole bunch of VCs, and now you're on the other side of it. So when women are pitching in particular, I know that there was a couple things that you sent over ahead of time, which I thought was an interesting point that you laid out. Navigating the confidence gap. What is the confidence gap when it comes specifically to women pitching venture capitalists trying to get money? Is that like imposter syndrome? Like, what is that?
I think the difference is that men, and we're being stereotypical, right? Because, you know, that's the only way we can have this kind of conversation. Of course, it's not true for all men and it's not true for all women. But if we're stereotypical for a millisecond, women tend to be very realistic and measured in the way they pitch themselves, in terms of they tend not to ever overinflate their numbers. They tend to not be overly aggressive. They tend to not want to project something they are not 5,000% confident they can deliver on. And for venture capital, that just doesn't cut it, right? Because what you're looking for is somebody to say, I'm going to build the next Uber for Africa.
And they want the most grandiose vision.
You want the Adam Newman craziness, right?
You know. That's a whole other conversation.
You want quite that much crazy. Yeah. But you want women who are not afraid to stand in the room and say, I'm going to build a $1 billion company, or I'm going to build a $100 million company, and here's how I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do this, and this. And that they've got vision and clarity for something that's enormous. And I think women often get scared of enormous because they're worried about, I'm here right now and can't necessarily connect all the dots between here and there. And the reality is, when you're at the beginning stages of your journey, nobody can connect the dots from here to here. But all you've got is crazy ideas that say, I think this is possible. And so we need women to pitch bigger dreams, because bigger dreams is what excites people, because people are trying to make a return, trying to make big returns, right? Venture capital's, you know, high risk, high reward kind of game. So women tend to play it a bit more safe, tend to play it a bit more conservatively, tend to be much more measured, and will inevitably deliver on all those things that they just pitched, but may not win the game, may not win the investment. And so I think the gap is between realism and optimism. And venture capitalism requires an enormous amount of optimism. And then we settle for realism when we can't pull it off, right? But we need women to sort of move into this, like, here's the next level of imagining what could be possible in a, you know, with an incredible wind and all things, like, working out.
If everything works out, best case scenario, this is what's happening.
Best case scenarios, exactly. And I think what women pitch often is realistic scenarios. And that is unfortunately not winning prizes.
Another stat that's really concerning, and it's shocking, and I always get these shocking stats, which are actually quite depressing when I do these interviews because I speak to the people that are researching them and they're in these worlds. So 3.4% was the funding for women entrepreneurs pre-pandemic. I don't know what the sample was for that particular. Maybe it's North America. Maybe you can...
probably be North America, yeah.
Yeah, but it reduced from 3.4% to 2.4% of overall funding, which is absolutely wild. Those numbers are like so horrible, but I guess if these are the numbers,
The crazy thing is that stat hasn't really... It's not really changed. I mean, yes, that's like a little drop, but the stat has been...
I have issue with more of the 3.4% than anything. Like, it's like the 3.4% to 2.4% sucks. But the issue is not that it went from 3.4 to 2.4. The issue is that it started at 3.4.
Yeah, exactly. And just that it's been like that for decades. It just hasn't changed, that there's been no major movement in decades. It's not like, oh, last year was a bad year and we had a dip and we were on the up every other year prior to that. No, that's just not the trajectory of how that's been. And we're not moving the needle on it, and we're not seeing it change at all. And as you said, it's getting worse more than anything. So that is a depressing stat. And the only thing, there's two things that will move the needle. Just like when we had to all get real with, it's no longer okay that we hire people that only look like us. We have to start diversifying who we hire, and we have to start working a bit harder to find people who don't look like us in our hiring, and that becoming a much more mainstream approach. And definitely we're not over that hump yet, but definitely it's in our radars. Most senior execs would have it in their radars that they should be thinking diversely about hiring for their companies, because it, if nothing else, it will make their companies likely perform better, because diverse teams generally perform better. I think we have to have the same realization with venture capital, that actually our portfolios might perform better if we had a more diverse group of people sitting at the table, getting capital and building businesses. And so we've that's the first thing, really. The gatekeepers absolutely have to start thinking differently about it being okay to not be okay to only invest in people that look like them, or a monocultural approach to investing. We've got to do something about that. We've got to do it quickly, and we've got to do it overtly. And that means people of color have to be sitting at the table, and women have to be sitting at the table. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, women have got to start thinking bigger. So the other problematic stat is that only 2% of women-led businesses ever do more than $1 million of revenue. So there's a problem.
Get out. Right? Are you serious?
Yes, exactly. So only 2% of all women-led businesses do more than $1 million of revenue. So women have got to start thinking differently about the women that they build. If we want to be more investable, we've got to be building different kinds of businesses. So that's the thing we can control, right? We can't control the gatekeepers. The gatekeepers have to do that by themselves. But the thing we can control is building bigger, thinking bigger, taking the ceilings off the things that we think about and the things that hold us back, to be able to build businesses that are completely different than what we're doing today. And how do we do that? Well, we surround ourselves and we find people to help us think differently than we already think. We get people to help us get unstuck. We get coaches, we get mentors, we belong to associations and networks, and we join WPO and EO, and we do what we, and our chambers of commerce, and we get help, because it is okay for us to say, I don't know how to do this. I have no idea how to build a business that does more than $1 million of revenue. I don't even know how to build a business that does $1 million of revenue. Get help. Because women, if we don't, this is what we're saddled with, right? And women have to start thinking about building different kinds of businesses and businesses that scale. And we have to give ourselves permission. We have to say we are able, we are capable, and we will find the resources to be able to do that. And we will do it because I think the world needs us to do it. I think the world will be a much better place for all of us if women do it. And yes, I know we have childcare responsibilities and, you know, an unequal burden for managing our homes and managing our children's lives. But it is possible to do it. We just need to ask for help and not be afraid to ask for help.
Do you notice in some of the women founders and entrepreneurs that you work with, they had a vision when they came in and when they raised money from you, but then being in your ecosystem, just being around you all the time and having these different conversations, do you see the vision start to change?
100%. Absolutely. It's almost like you give women permission. And when I first hear them pitch and they give me their realistic pitch, and then I say, okay, let's multiply that by 100. Let's think about doing that 100 times bigger than you're imagining today. And then they go, oh, okay, all right, let's do that. And it's not like, it suddenly is like, oh no, I can't do that. It's like somebody giving you permission to think like that. Somebody saying, that's not overly ambitious. That's not inappropriate for you. We could do this. Let's do that. And then suddenly that's a game changer for women, because then you've taken off the mindset that you've maybe come to the table with, and someone has helped you shift your thinking, and you're surrounded by other women who are thinking the same, which is really powerful, because then you don't feel like you're crazy. Then you just feel like, oh, this feels much more normal. And that's what we need for women. We need it to feel much more normal to be talking about doing $100 million of revenue. That needs to be normal.
Well, if you just like, if you equate it to that stat you just dropped, you said less than 2% do a million. So say that there's probably a stat for men and it's going to be much higher, I would assume. So say that I'm going to pick a random number, say 50%. So that just means that 5 out of 10 of your friends have had businesses in your peer group, have had businesses that have, if you're an entrepreneur, that have done over a million. So that's normal. It's almost like if you don't do under a million, if you don't do over a million, then you're actually in the minority.
Not normal.
It's not normal.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you take that, if you take another equal peer group of 10 women and 2%, that means that, well, that means like that'd be 20%. That would be, yeah. So that would be like less than one, and maybe none in that particular sample size of 10 people has ever done a business of over a million. So then all the conversations you have with everybody every single day casually is going to be like, well, you know, my business does this and it's basically a glorified job and it's making $200,000, $300,000 or $500,000, $600,000. And that's pretty much a normal conversation. If these stats are valid, that's wild. And that would totally
be like a game changer.
It would completely impact how I view business.
Yeah, totally. Because you'd be surrounded by people who were having different conversations than you were having. And your normal would now be a different normal. And the amazing thing about our normals changing is that when our normal changes, a whole load of other people's normals are changed, right? So imagine the difference your business can make if you go from doing 1 million of revenue to 10 million in revenue. Imagine how many jobs you just created. Imagine how many single moms just put their kids through school or college or whatever. Imagine what you are able to do by building a bigger business. And I often think women think it's like inappropriate to build something big. It's because we don't want to be seen to be like, you know, we don't want to be like the boys. We don't want to be like the boys club, right? Because it's ugly and we, you know, capitalism's ugly and, you know, there's lots about it that we can't identify with. But when you start thinking about the impact that my business could have when I'm a $10 million revenue business or a $20 million revenue business as opposed to a, you know, $100,000 business, the impact's extraordinary. You know, the number of lives, the number of people's, you know, families, the education people can get, you know, the opportunities that people will have, it's just totally different. And the impact and the causes that we care about, we have a platform for, and that we can do something about, and we can drive change. And, you know, and I think when women have wealth, they have more choices. They potentially have the opportunity to have better lives. And you know, the ripple effects for our communities will be extraordinary. And that's, you know, that's what we've got to start wrapping our brains around, and not just thinking, well, I don't think I can, but start asking ourselves, why can I not do that? And what's it going to take for me to make that happen? And start putting yourself in the room where you don't feel like you belong today, but spending 10 minutes in that room will make you feel like, no, if they can do it, I can definitely do it. And that's what we need to do. We're putting ourselves in rooms where people are doing bigger and better things than we're doing.
It's just very interesting, because you mentioned like the almost like the aversion to capitalism. And I do believe it's because if you look at the largest companies in the world and the most prolific entrepreneurs, there's a lot of negative, though. There's a lot of negative that's covered. And you know, pick a name that everyone knows, like Elon Musk. People love him, people hate him for a variety of different reasons. And or any company that lays off people, then that'll be in the news. You know, X company laid off X percentage of people. But if you actually think, stop and think for a second, yes, there was layoffs for one period in one moment in time in that company's life cycle, or maybe even twice. But over the course of the 10 years of that company, how many careers did that company make? How many opportunities did that company create? And there's a lot of negative, but there's a lot of positive that isn't covered. When you grow from no employees and nothing to thousands and thousands of employees, that's thousands and thousands of employees that have had careers and livelihoods for a significant period of time.
And I think in conjunction with that, women get to lead differently. We don't have to lead like Elon Musk, right? We
don't. No,
have
you don't. To lead you definitely like don't. You can lead. It's a lot of other ways to lead.
We don't have to optimize every millisecond, you know, every cent for the bottom line. We can optimize for good. We can optimize for our people, right? We can optimize. There are many ways we can optimize, but making money gives us choices. And we can choose to build better companies. We can choose to build in ways that are sustainable and long term, and that we care about people, the planet, and our, you know, our world. So that's what we've got to do. And I think there have not been enough precedents of women leading. I have a friend who became the 22nd woman in history, and she happens to be a Black woman, so the first Black woman in history to have ever taken a company public. And I was like, 22 women have done that. That's not a lot of women. So
in 2023, that shouldn't be such a low number.
No, it shouldn't. So we have an opportunity. We just have to decide we're going to do something about it. And it doesn't have to look like it's been done for the last million years. We can do it our own way. We can lead in ways that matter to us. We don't have to follow the examples of, you know, the people we don't like. We don't have to worry about, you know, people who've made money are the bad guys. The people who've made money who are the bad guys are the people who are not seemingly doing enough for the little guys. And that's our opportunity, right? Let's lead in a way that we take everyone with us, because being wealthy on your own is pretty boring anyway. So let's build wealth for the masses and make life better for everyone.
I love that. So I have one question I'd ask everyone before we close these out. But before we pivot, what would be one final piece of advice or word of advice you'd want to give young entrepreneurs, people that are looking to build something, raise money? You've given a lot, but what would be like the one parting thing that we didn't go into or that you wanted to cover?
I'd maybe say dream bigger. That would, we kind of talked about it, but I would say it again. Don't be afraid to dream big. Don't let anyone sit on squash your ideas or tell you can't, or that you shouldn't, or that you don't belong in a certain room or a certain table. Think bigger, dream bigger. Believe in yourself and other people will believe in you. So dream big.
I love it. Okay. If people do want to connect with you, where should they go? Where do you want to send people? Social, website, all of them?
Yeah, I'm really active on LinkedIn. So follow me on LinkedIn at Sarah Dusick, and also on Instagram. But if you want to connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. And then after all of this, what does success mean to you?
Oof, you are asking the big ones today, Scott. I think it's quite simple, actually. Success for me, or maybe it's twofold. Success for me means leaving the world in a better place than when I arrived in it. So hopefully moving the world forward, doing something to move the world forward, even just a little bit. And connected with that, fulfilling and doing everything that I was designed and made to be and do. So fulfilling your destiny and your potential, I guess. Not leaving anything on the table. Putting it all out there. That's what success is.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.